go. Shoot Around Podcast, WGN Radio, and the WGN Radio family. This is WGN Plus. He is Barstool Big Cat, and I'm Sam Panionovich. Welcome to it.
I can't stand people who think that Jimmy Butler is going to L.A. or Boston.
That one-year, $200 million contract
I'm
the Lakers
jumping
want to give
right into this because I am going insane. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. First of all, Jimmy Butler has always said that he wanted to stay in Chicago, right?
Yep.
I mean, he always has said he wanted to stay in Chicago. This new news is probably just his agent making sure that the Bulls stay true to their word and offer him max money, which they will. They did. And this is insanity. Jimmy Butler's going to be a Bull, no matter what.
Next year. No matter what next year. Here are the options. And if you haven't been following the situation, make sure you check out Mark Deeks. He's on Twitter at MarkDeeksNBA. There are four options, essentially, for the Jimmy Butler camp. The first one is to accept that max qualifying offer for 5 years. Probably won't happen.
Although,
probably not.
It's tough to turn down $90 million. But I agree with you. It probably will not happen, but it is $90 million.
This is the one I think does not happen because Jimmy Butler already bet on himself once. I don't know if he can do it 2 years in a row. That one-year qualifying offer for $4.5 million, which essentially would make him an unrestricted free agent next year.
And remember, this is the NBA we're talking about, so the money's guaranteed. So when you say Jimmy Butler could make $90 million or $4 million, yes, it's $90 million over 5 years, and he's missing out on the salary cap rising. But that's $90 million in your bank account. That is $90 million.
How greedy can you be?
To say, no, I won't, and I'll play for $4.4 million this year and risk an injury, risk not playing as well as I did.
Don't do it.
He won't do it. His agent won't let him do it. He won't do it. The third option is probably the one that's probably most likely.
Which is to sign an offer sheet with another team for 3 years, which doesn't include opt-year. So it's 3 years with a different team, which, of course, the Bulls would match because they can match any offer sheet. He is restricted. That would likely make him leave Chicago after 3 years, but you get him in the middle or the heart of his prime. That makes sense.
It makes perfect sense for him to sign that, and I think that we both agree that that's what he's going to sign. And good on Jimmy Butler, because Jimmy Butler, last year in the fall, he said he's betting on himself. The Bulls were at 4 years, $44 million. Jimmy Butler wanted 4 years, $48 million. Kind of hurts now to say that they're only $4 million apart. But Jimmy Butler, basically what he did with this last season, he went from having a 4 year, $48 million contract to having a 3 year, $51 million contract. Pretty nice. That's a pretty nice bet on yourself. Good for him. The Bulls did what they were supposed to do. They weren't going to pay him until he, proved it. Jimmy Butler proved it, so now it's payday. And you can't be upset if the Bulls are going to control Jimmy Butler till he's 28 years old. That's probably what's going to happen. I just can't stand people who don't understand this situation.
The fourth and final option, which looks a little unlikely, is they just completely restructure everything. The Bulls and Butler, both sides meet at the table, probably oak, nice felt pens, and they hammer out a brand new deal, which I'm a little skeptical about. I think it's that three-year deal that will be offered by the Lakers or by the Celtics or whatever, and the Bulls will match it, which will keep Jimmy Butler in Chicago through the 2017-18 season. And at that point, I'd probably be ready to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Because I'm not paying Jimmy Butler $200 million. I'm sorry. I love the story. The 30th pick. Tomball, Texas. Didn't have a home. Went to Marquette. Starred there. Didn't think he would do much in the NBA. And he has blossomed into a potential superstar. But where do you draw the line?
Right.
I mean, LeBron James is still in the NBA.
Right.
In his prime.
And guess what? If in 3 years, that money could go to Anthony Davis.
Yes. Ding,
so
ding, ding, ding,
that's
ding,
the
ding,
guy
ding.
You want. And, to go back to Jimmy Butler really quickly, this whole, is he going to go to L.A.? Is he going to go to Boston? Is he going to go to Houston? All this rumblings. It's all noise. And I know that there's been rumors that he and Derrick Rose don't get along. I still don't fully believe it because it's really only coming from one place.
And it wouldn't make him leave a team.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't that bad.
Right.
They just both wanted the ball.
Right. And I think that people will realize that, especially under Hoiberg's offense, where they will all get the ball a little bit more because he's going to actually run plays, let them play a little bit more open. They're not going to have to play defense like they used to.
I think they'll run less plays, though. I think you got it twisted there because Tibbs ran the set plays and wouldn't break away.
Right. What I meant was they're going to have a little, they're going to have more freedom.
Read and react
with the ball.
Which is actually what Bobby Portis said. And by the way, shout out to you for saying Bobby Portis would be picked by the Bulls. It was bold. I thought he'd go 15. He falls to 22, but at his press conference yesterday, he applauded Fred Hoiberg for that very statement that Hoiberg lets his players sort of read and react
right.
and give what the defense gives you.
And that's going to help. I mean, that's going to help Derrick Rose. That's going to help Jimmy Butler. That is going to help the entire offense have, you know, with these problems where they were frustrated down the stretch in the fourth quarters. How many fourth quarters did we see where the offense would just go stretches without scoring? I don't think that's going to happen anymore. They're not going to be the same defensive team, but the offense is going to be better. And Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose fake, you know, controversy where they don't like each other will go away. So I'm not worried about Jimmy Butler. If Bulls fans out there, if you have anything that you should be worried about, it's how can you get rid of Taj Gibson or Joakim Noah? That's really what you should be worried about. And get in return a draft pick and a backup point guard for when Derrick Rose gets injured.
LeBron James, I repeat, is still in the Eastern Conference, and it looks more and more every day that Kevin Love will stay in Cleveland, so they'll throw out a lineup in the postseason of LeBron, Love, Kyrie Irving, Tristan Thompson, and Big Cat. Say Big Cat's the fifth guy. Does it matter at that point? No, it probably doesn't. So we're getting worked up about a guy who will keep the Bulls in contention. Will he take them to a championship? That's a different story for a different day. We'll talk a lot of things around the shoot-around. How about this free agency period, though? Because Monday morning radio this week was one of the most boring weeks where they just try and guess where everybody... I heard LeBron might go to L.A.
Yeah, well,
LeBron
would love...
and Kevin Love are going to L.A.
I would love for LeBron to just dip his toe in, just to needle Cleveland just a little bit.
After
he's obviously
he's
going back to the Cavs.
After that's, 1 year.
We know that, so that domino is done. LeBron James going back to the Cavs. Kevin Love most likely going back to the Cavs. I think it starts to get a little bit interesting when you start talk about guys like LaMarcus Aldridge. Who else is it? There's a few other guys that are they could shift the playoff picture and how things kind of roll out.
Marc Gasol, yep. DeAndre Jordan.
DeAndre Jordan's an interesting one. That's a guy who he seems to be getting better, but you still have the problems, and he's a terror. He does the one thing in the NBA that is completely underrated by casual fans, and that's protect the rim. When you have a guy who can protect the rim, you saw it when Joakim Noah was right. It changes your defense, and DeAndre Jordan is that guy. You have the problem with he obviously his offensive game is somewhat limited, but he's a freak athlete. He's a guy who could change things around. Are the Lakers going to be, you know, players? Are they going to try to make one last run at it with Kobe and his corpse? I don't know.
It looked that way once Mitch Kupchak and company drafted D'Angelo Russell. Do you draft D'Angelo Russell knowing that at some point down the road, Kobe has worked some backdoor channels, talked to a big player?
Well, that was a great move by the Lakers. And I was actually shocked that they did that because I feel like the Lakers are a team that don't really understand what's going on. And a front court of Okafor and Julius Randle was going to be a disaster because they both don't really play defense. And I still am convinced that if you look at the NBA and the way it's going, small ball reigns supreme. You just had an NBA Finals with Draymond Green and LeBron James as starting centers. So to have like this front court where you have big guys, slow big guys who take a while to get back up and down the court and can't run with you know the shorter guys like a Draymond Green, that was going to be a disaster. So that was actually smart by the Lakers. And my hat's off to the Lakers. I hate to give them a compliment, but that was a smart move. But you'd have to admit that you'd have to think that they were going to get someone else now that they went D'Angelo Russell.
NBA.com put together this list. These are the top eight free agents. Goran Dragic, 8. Draymond Green, 7. DeAndre Jordan, 6. Jimmy Butler, 5. Kevin Love, 4. Kawhi Leonard, 3. Marc Gasol, 2. And LaMarcus Aldridge is 1. You know what crossed my mind yesterday? I'm reading this article from the New York Daily News about some of the big fish that Carmelo Anthony is now recruiting. And the headline of that list was Aaron Aflalo.
They're such a disaster.
Is there a worse contract in basketball right now than Carmelo Anthony?
I will be the first to admit, everyone who's listening is probably a reader, so they know I wanted Carmelo. I thought Carmelo would be a great fit for the Bulls. I still sort of do. I still think that if you put Carmelo around the pieces that the Bulls have, it could work. But, oh my God, is that a bad contract.
It crippled the Knicks.
Yeah, and then they went and drafted the white European guy.
Kristaps Porzingis?
People are being, you know, tough on him.
Not a bad pick. I had no problem with the pick.
I mean, I don't have a problem with it. Well, I don't know. The Knicks are just weird. I don't understand what they're doing. I don't know if Phil Jackson knows what he's doing. He feels like an old guy who the game is kind of passing him by. You know, he's doing this whole thing with the triangle offense where he's like, the triangle still is the offense to win a championship. What? Look at the NBA Finals. Watch it for 2 seconds, and you know the direction that the NBA is going. I guess if you're going to be, like, against the grain and make everyone adjust back to the triangle, I'll believe it when I see it.
Knicks brass thought that Phil Jackson would come in and instantaneously morph into Red Auerbach or Jerry West. It takes time, and Phil was never really one to scout. Phil never had to bring people in. He just coached what was provided for him.
He had Michael who brought people in. He had Kobe and Shaq who brought people
Carmelo
in.
Carmelo doesn't move the meter.
No.
Where are all of Carmelo's friends? Where are these guys that, when Carmelo signed, Phil said he was the cornerstone? There's nobody coming to New York to play with Carmelo Anthony.
No,
nobody.
It's tough.
And what does he do well? He does one thing well. He could shoot. He can score from the elbow. That's all he does. And he makes $25 million. 5 years, $122 million.
All right, well, let's not underrate. He is an all-time great scorer. He's a great scorer.
I thought you were going to say an all-time great Nick.
No, no, no. He's a great scorer. When Carmelo, if he's healthy and playing like he should, he's a top three scorer in the NBA. Guys that you can't guard no matter what. It's like basically Kevin Durant, Carmelo, and LeBron. Just on a pure scoring standpoint. He doesn't play defense. We all know that. So, the Knicks are a mess. I'm going to keep laughing at them. I don't know if you just saw this, but LeBron is now trying to steal our toughest piece of our roster, the nails in the Bulls roster.
Mike Dunleavy.
I mean, what a jerk LeBron is. I feel like this is personal. He's doing this to me. Because I love Mike Dunleavy. Mike Dunleavy, we said, if you were going to get in a fight with anyone on the Bulls team, like, what was the last guy you want to get in a fight with?
Him.
It's Jimmy Butler's last. Mike Dunleavy's second to last. Because he's a white guy like that, a tough white guy like that. There's something else.
I'm picturing LeBron in high school. If I went to high school with LeBron, and in high school we always
Windhorst.
Played basketball on the playground. I'm picturing LeBron just having his way, like it's LeBron and the four best players, you know, playing on the playground. Like LeBron wants, you know, Danny, who is going D1. He wants Tyler, who's going to play at Notre Dame. He wanted all the good players around him playing on the blacktop because he always wanted his way. That's
exactly
how I picture it. And we'll talk about the Blackhawks. We'll talk about some baseball here in town, the Cubs and White Sox. Cubs have lost 5 in a row. The White Sox can win 5 in a row. That probably won't change their outcome. We'll do the mailbag later on in the show as well. He's at Barstool Big Cat. I'm at SP Shoot. And a special guest on the show, Zach Hampel, will join us. ZachHampel.com. He's on Twitter. He's got over 8,000 baseballs. At Zach_Hampel, he'll lead off the second half. But I'm reading Twitter here, and this is what you do in a hockey offseason. Just from Chris Cook alone, from the Chicago Tribune. Here are 3 tweets in a row. Hearing the Stars have interest in free agent Johnny Oduya. One source says the Bruins are interested in Brian Bickle. As for Patrick
Sharp,
Blackhawks asking price remaining too high. So the Blackhawks are busy, and will stay busy.
I actually think that Patrick Sharp is going to go the way of Nick Leddy. I think he'll be on the roster up until a week before opening night. Because I just see that as there was a window before the draft for what Stan Bowman wanted. Didn't work out. Which probably is going to net them less of a return because now some of the leverage is gone. I think Bickle will probably be gone soon. But Patrick Sharp will probably make it through the summer, and then he'll get unloaded right before the season starts.
So the price comes down
right
every day.
It's unfortunate, but I don't really see it. The draft was really their chance to get something. And I know for a fact that obviously they were calling everyone and trying to move pieces, but sometimes it just doesn't work out, and that's kind of where the Blackhawks are.
It also could be sort of a peak and valley type deal where you have the two peaks on the ends and then the valleys in the middle. His stock is really high in the draft, and then there's that moratorium period. But then when you see a young up-and-coming team, it gets to September, October, hey, we could really use a winger that
right.
can score.
Right. Right, you look at it, when you start to put together your roster and you say, well, we could maybe contend here.
We're missing one guy.
We need one veteran guy, and that's where you get, you know, some value for him. So, yes, yeah, Stan still has some moves. I saw also there was a report that Brandon Saad and the Blackhawks are farther apart than we initially thought.
They want the bridge deal. He wants a bigger, better offer.
It's funny when I remember right after the Stanley Cup, right after they won, Brandon Saad said something about getting a home, you know, giving him a slight hometown discount. Don't ever believe that when players say that. It's always about the money, and I don't blame him. That he deserves the money. It was just funny that people were saying, oh, yeah, Brandon Saad, he'll take a little bit less. He'll take a little bit. No, he won't. He shouldn't. Why should he? He's a great player.
I think he's going to sign that five-year deal for about $26, $27 million. That's what he would like. And the Blackhawks would like to give him 2 or 3 years, maybe about 4.5. So that is a gap when you accumulate the years and the amount of money. They're probably about $8 or $9 million off.
I have a question for you. Do you think that Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane have any remorse for... Now, obviously, they don't have remorse for signing great deals. They're making $10.5 million a year. But do you think there's a little bit of them where they're looking around and they're saying, well, we really kind of put our team in a little bit of a bind here with the cap, and it's going to be slim pickings for a while here when it comes to free agency and picking up pieces if the cap doesn't move up in the next few years?
Not yet. Wait till they get to the playoffs and they realize that the depth was what carried them to 5 Western Conference finals in 7 years. When they looked on that lineup in April and May, and they don't have Sharp, and maybe they don't have Bickle, maybe Hossa's hurt. I mean, who knows
right.
with Marian Hossa, who's about to be 36, 37 years old. The more years into the contract, maybe they'll have a little remorse, but certainly nothing yet.
Well, and the crazy thing is they probably took less than they could have gotten. You know, $10.5 million a year, I don't know what the highest paid player in the NHL is. You'd have to look that up for me, but they probably could have gotten more in the open market. So it's funny that you see it. And when they signed it, you're like, oh, okay, well, this is fair. And then you get to the point where Stan's got to start moving some chips around and Patrick Sharp's got to leave and Brian Bickle's got to leave and Brandon Saad might not be able to get the contract that he wants. And you start to see, okay, well, you know, $21 million out of a $71, $74 million cap is a lot.
The two highest paid players in hockey in the 15-16 season, Kane and Toews.
Well, that makes sense. They deserve it. They deserve every
dollar
of it.
For the cap hit. The next three, Ovechkin at 9.5, Malkin at 9.5, and P.K. Subban at 9.5.
So, yeah, I wonder when those guys sign their deals. Because if you made them all free agents right now, I wonder what the top dollar would be, because that would probably be more than the $10.5 million that they signed for.
So your Cubbies have now dropped 5 in a row. Wouldn't panic yet because it's Dodgers, Dodgers, Cardinals, Cardinals, Cardinals. But
ever since we talked about it, we said how fun the Cubs are and how great this season has been. And remember, I think we even said that it was kind of like 08 when we're like,
I wouldn't say we. I would
okay,
say
I
you.
Did. I said it was kind of like 08 where they just kind of found a way to win every game. What we learned in the last week, the Cubs are still a good team. They are not Dodgers Cardinals good. There's definitely a step up in the National League and baseball in general that you'd probably put the Nationals, even though their record doesn't say it, but they're the Nationals, the Cardinals, and the Dodgers. And the Cubs aren't there. We found that out. I still think they're a wild card team.
Absolutely.
This next week is going to be very important for them, because what you don't want to have happen is fall back to 500. Because then I feel like that's a deflating thing to have happen. All the talk about the hot start, how they're, you know, above 500 for the first time in 6 years. And, you know, if they fall back to 500 this week, how many are they over right now?
right now 39-35, a game and a half out of the wild card.
So, yeah. So you need to, you know, you get the Mets for three.
Then the Marlins for three. Four against the Cardinals, and then three wins against the White Sox.
Yeah, there it is. So I think the Mets and the Marlins, you're hoping, and three of those are at home, you're hoping to get back to 4-2 out of those six, and then you'll be back on track. But, you know, what we learned over the weekend, and it was a really bad weekend in St. Louis, Friday night was a classic Cubs-Cardinals game.
Had a chance.
Where the Cubs are up 2-1 in the eighth, and you knew they were going to lose. I knew they were going to lose. Saturday, they start Don Roach. Just the name. That's not a guy that can pitch in Major League Baseball. Get killed. Sunday, Hamill, not the best outing. He's kind of fallen back a little bit to earth here. You learned what we already knew. The Cubs need another bat because they just keep – they don't have, you know, hitters that can string together hits. They keep getting into double plays. They don't have a lot of high average guys. And they need another arm. And it probably a starting arm and a reliever.
I think Joe Maddon said it best after that three-game sweep against the Cardinals. He said that we just don't know how to pitch with pressure yet. Close situations, late in games, eighth, ninth inning, big game against St. Louis. He said, we'll learn that over time, but right now that's our problem. We don't know how to pitch with pressure.
No, and it's a fair point. And I said this last year when the Cubs were starting to show a few flashes of being a team that was going to maybe, you know, put it all together. Learning how to win is an important piece to this puzzle. They need to learn how to win day in and day out. Learn how to win when your pitcher doesn't pitch the best game. Learn how to win when, you know, maybe not everyone is locked in hitting. It's a skill, and that's what the Cardinals do. The Cardinals, I want to puke every time I see it. They just roll out some guy who shouldn't be good at baseball, and he's good, and he gets a big hit.
Okay, settle this debate for me, because I got into it over the weekend at a bar with somebody, and he was trying to tell me that Cub fans, of all the teams in baseball, they hate the White Sox the most, and I disagree.
Oh,
I thought
so
it was
wrong.
St. Louis,
yeah.
Hands down.
Listen, that's I don't know who said this, but he's very, very wrong.
Okay.
Because it's St. Louis without a doubt. The White Sox-Cubs relationship is it's a big brother-little brother thing where I know the White Sox have won the World Series. They've had the more success recently. But I would say most Cubs fans don't really
care.
They don't care. Because guess what? Hey, whether you want to admit it or not, the Cubs are the team in Chicago. I have a lot of friends who are White Sox fans. We went down, we did the day at the park, had a great time with all the White Sox fans stoolies. But when it comes to media attention, when it comes to what people think around the country, it's Chicago and it's the Cubs. So I would understand if I was a White Sox fan, I'd be a little upset, and I think White Sox fans hate Cubs fans more
exactly.
than Cubs fans.
That's
hate
how it is
White
on the
Sox
South
fans.
Side. And since right. you brought up Big Brother, Little Brother, let's talk a little bit about Little Brother. I'm waiting for this fire sale. Just get it over with. Let's put these guys on the block. Keep Chris Sale, keep Abreu, and move everybody. Because the confusion that I heard from Kenny Williams, did you catch what Kenny Williams says? He pretty much took a shot at Rick Hahn and says he needs to be more involved. Kenny believes that he himself needs to be more involved now in the day-to-day operations.
I just can't believe that Ventura's still around. And I know I've read that people say that it's not all Ventura's fault, and a lot of guys that they signed,
he's a dead man walking. He has no confidence in this club.
It has nothing to do. If you look at the White Sox right now, and you can even say to yourself, it's not Robin Ventura's fault. I'll accept that, okay? You want to say, hey, Robin Ventura is not the problem here. It's that our players suck.
Which, that is also true.
Is Robin Ventura going to be the manager when this is all turned around?
No.
So what the hell are you doing right now? What are you doing? Get rid of him. If he's not going to be the future, look at what happened with the Cubs. The Cubs, Ricky Renteria, he got dogged pretty bad. One-year manager, but Theo and Jed said, is this the guy who's going to be hoisting the World Series trophy in our brain? No. Sorry. Sucks that you're only here for 1 year. Sucks that, you know, we found someone else. But that's just a fact. If you got to find the guy who's going to be the solution.
And there aren't many elite managers in the game. Nate Silver did a great write-up about that on 538, how the search for the elite manager is pretty tough. There are only a handful. But I agree. This team does not play well. for Robin Ventura. They aren't lining up to run through that wall for Robin Ventura.
I love White Sox fans hoping for Ozzie Guillen back. You're a White Sox fan. What do you think about when you
why not?
I love
why
it.
Why not? Bring him back.
From a blogger's point of view, it would be fantastic. Because Ozzie, whether you love him or hate him, the guy was a good quote, and he always kept things fun. And I don't know, maybe you bring him back as an interim. Just be like, hey, this season's shot anyway. Ozzie, if you can get these guys to play, you get a job next year.
And his son's playing locally in the Frontier League. He plays for like the Joliet Slammers or something.
Really?
Ozzie's around. I promise
he's
you.
Going to the, he's going around. To the 10-year anniversary. I saw that he was going. I'm sure that he's going to probably try to sit in Robin's chair and lock the door and keep him out. They're not going to do it because... Sports.
Because they should do it. That's why they won't
right.
do it.
Well, I don't even know if they should do it, but sports are rarely as fun as we can make them out to be in our brain. But that would be so awesome if Ozzie came back and lit a fire under these guys.
Halfway home on the Shoot Around Podcast, WGN and WGN Plus. Home run guy, foul ball guy. We'll get into exactly what he'd like to be called. Zach Hampel joins the show next, and then we'll do the Q&A mailbag to wrap up the show. He's Barstool Big Cat. I'm Sam Panayotovic. You've got the Shoot Around. Second half, Shoot Around Podcast, WGN, WGN Plus, Barstool Big Cat, and Sam Panayotovic. Ask and you shall receive, Cat. You were told that foul ball guy would join us on the show.
This is the man I wanted. This is the man I wanted.
This is him, Zach Hampel, who is, by the way, taking time out of his busy day. He's on his way to a Mets game. Obviously, the gates open at about 4:30 Eastern, so he'll be there at 4:29. But before that, he joins us now. Hey, Zach, welcome.
Well, hey, good to be with you. But I think it's about time that we upgrade my nickname from foul ball guy to home run guy. What do you say?
Oh, I'm okay with that. And I'm going to start this being totally upfront with you, Zach. Home run guy. I used to despise you. And I'll be up front with you on this one. It was when the first video came out, and it was the one line, "Sir, watch your elbows." And I hated you then. But once you caught that ball with A-Rod, and I realized you're actually a good guy, and you're kind of, I mean, it's amazing that you caught that ball. I've racked my brain over and over trying to do the odds. So I'm actually now team home run ball guy, and if you ever need security for all these people who are coming at you in the bleachers, I'm your guy.
I appreciate that. Actually, I've been to 2 Yankee games since I snagged the A-Rod ball. And everyone's been amazing in person, very positive, taking a lot of selfies. There's obviously a lot of negativity online, but it seems that the more people know me and the more direct contact they have with me, the nicer they are.
You're an author, 3 books now. You're a celebrity on Twitter. You collect baseballs. Now, the figure, I've heard 6,000. I've heard 8,000. What is the exact number of baseballs that you have?
The exact number does include balls from batting practice and other warm-ups, as well as 32 game home run balls and 159 foul balls during games. So if you take those numbers, throw in batting practice and everything else, 8,173 is the up-to-the-minute total.
But you can understand the doubters, right? Because I've been to baseball games for 20 years now, Zach, and I've caught altogether maybe about 15. Do you understand the doubters?
Yeah. I used to keep a photo in my wallet that I'd pull out for people if they didn't believe me. Like, you haven't caught all those balls. And, there would be a picture of me in a bathtub of baseballs. And now if anybody doubts it, it's like, okay, you're right. I didn't catch them. And then they're like, well, wait, did you or didn't you? And I just walk away. Like, I think I'm past the point of needing to prove myself. I don't do it for anybody else. I do it because it's fun. And, yeah, I understand that the numbers are staggering. But if anybody doubts me, just search for me on YouTube. I have videos where I'm at stadiums. You'll see how many I catch. Come watch me in person sometime. I average about 7 or 8 balls a game in New York and probably more than 10 when I'm outside of New York. And, I don't knock kids down. I don't steal baseballs. There's a lot of false rumors out there. I give baseballs to kids. I've been using my collection since 2009 to raise money for a children's baseball charity called Pitch In for Baseball. So, yeah, I understand why some people might be pissed off, but I guess I just want everyone to know that I'm not a total jerk in the process of running around and doing this.
Well, what you just said is why I've switched to Team Zach, because what I heard was you are the best at what you do, and all the doubters and haters out there can take a hike because the haters just make us stronger. I always say that. It's kind of a saying that I have that I throw around in my brain, and it sounds like you have the same saying with that picture of you with the balls in the bathtub, and anyone who doubts you, you know what? They're sitting there doubting you, and you're out there catching balls.
Yeah, that's a nice way to look at it. I mean, I'm just glad that, you know, again, people have been positive in person. I don't want to get into any physical confrontations with people. You know, that's not my style. I went to Quaker school for 8 years. I'm a lover, not a fighter. And, you know, I just try to keep the peace out in the bleachers. And again, there's a lot of nasty stuff being said, and I wish that people would reserve judgment until they actually read my blog, look at the videos, come say hello in person and see what I'm all about.
We're with Zach Hampel on the Shoot Around podcast, formerly known as Foul Ball Guy, now known as A-Rod Home Run Guy. Two questions. First, you can't just throw that Quaker school thing at us without me getting a follow-up there. You went to Quaker school for 8 years?
Correct. I'm not Quaker, but I just kind of ended up at a few different schools. One was called Friends Seminary in Manhattan, where I grew up. I was there from 7th through 9th grade. And looking at different colleges, I just happened to pick one that was Quaker in North Carolina called Guilford College. Division III baseball program, liberal arts, beautiful campus. You know, I was on the baseball team there. Our baseball claim to fame is that Tony Womack played all 4 years of college there. And it was just a really nice time. And Quakers know what's up, man. I mean, I don't consider myself to be a particularly religious person, but I really like the Quaker attitude overall.
Nice. That's a little tidbit that we didn't know. So let's get to the important thing here. The A-Rod home run ball. You caught it. It was about, a couple weeks ago now. Do you still obviously have it. What are your options? Lay them out for us. What are you thinking? I've heard you say that you were going to give it back. I heard you were going to sell it. I've heard a lot of different stuff. So I'd like you to set the record straight on what you're going to do, or if you aren't going to do anything or you don't have a plan, what are the options?
I've been considering a ton of options and offers, and the very first thing I thought I would do is just keep the damn thing because I am a collector, and I just kind of feel like no matter what anyone could offer or whatever it could possibly sell for, to me is not worth more than just simply owning the ball and having it and getting to look at it. You know, I've had several meetings in person with the Yankees, several conversations with them as well. I just got off the phone an hour or two ago with Randy Levine, the president of the Yankees. They've all been great to me. And I was not intending to give it back, but the Yankees at one point, when they heard about my involvement with the children's baseball charity, suggested that they might make a large donation. And that was the first time that I thought, you know what? I wonder if something can be worked out with them. So, you know, right now the Yankees are on the road. They're still thinking about it. They're talking to the charity, trying to work things out. And I'm hopeful that that will happen. But at this point, I still really don't know.
So if the Yankees say, all right, Zach, we'll give you thousands of dollars, we'll sell your books at our stadium, and we let you go on a weekend clubbing trip with Derek Jeter, are you enticed? Does that even do anything for you?
You know what? I don't really like clubs. I'd rather probably play catch with Derek Jeter or, like, play Scrabble with him or something. But that's a funny idea. No, they've offered me a lot of stuff.
You've got the leverage here, Zach. You have everything they want.
Zach, as you're...
Well, it's not like I caught Jeter's 3,000th hit. It's A-Rod's 3,000th hit.
But still.
And, you know, it would be amazing, let's say, to get to play catch with A-Rod for 10 minutes on the field, you know, during early BP, 2 in the afternoon, no reporters, no fans, just me and A-Rod throwing it around. But I haven't had any contact with him, understandably, because the Yankees offered me the chance to meet him as a bargaining chip. So if A-Rod reaches out directly, well, that kind of takes the Yankees' offer away. So we'll see. They can't make any promises on his behalf. So I really, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. If the Yankees do make a donation to the charity, I would love to see A-Rod make a matching gift, but he's his own guy. Nobody can tell him what to do. So I'm not really concerned about that. I can only control myself and what I do with the ball and try to leverage the best deal with the Yankees and the charity and maybe set myself up for some cool perks at the stadium.
What would it go for on the open market? Because I think as your new security guard, I'm just going to tell you right now, I think we should sell it.
I see. Well, if I sell it, I'm probably going to have to hire you full time to be my guard.
Exactly.
But I've heard anywhere from $50,000, which to me seems laughably low.
Agreed.
All the way up to $500,000. And the way I see it is, and again, it's not like I'm going to sell it, but it's fun just to consider the numbers hypothetically. You know, in my last book, which is called The Baseball, I have a section of the top 10 selling balls of all time, ranging from a little over $3 million for Mark McGwire's 70th and final home run of his record-breaking season in 1998, all the way down to number 10, which was Barry Bonds' 715th career home run, which, of course, put him ahead of Babe Ruth, and that one sold for about $220,000. I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm not an auction guy, but I would be shocked if my A-Rod ball were to sell and did not crack the top 10. I just don't see how the only 3,000th-hit baseball in history that is owned by someone from the public, because the other two were given back to the players, if that ball were sent to auction, even despite all the controversy, I just, you know, I see it going for well up into the six figures.
Let's sell it. Let's sell it.
Zach Campbell from ZachCampbell.com, another minute or two. This obviously has been one of the most popular baseballs you've caught, but pre-A-Rod, before you caught the 3,000th hit, do you have a favorite baseball in your collection?
The one that seems to get everybody the most excited is Mike Trout's first career home run, which was pretty cool, obviously. You know, at the time, he was a 19-year-old batting 179. There was a lot of hype. He was the number one prospect in baseball, but he hadn't done anything yet. So it actually wasn't that huge of a moment for me at the time. So I guess my favorite ball, which at the time I knew was tremendous and really meant a lot, was that I caught the last home run that the New York Mets ever hit at Shea Stadium. That, to me, was just such an awesome moment.
Now, are you a Mets or a Yankees fan? I don't know if we cleared that up.
I am neither. I consider myself a baseball fan. I tend to root more for individual players. I mean, any particular game, I definitely am rooting for one of the teams, but that could change depending on who's at bat or who's pitching, you know, who's been nice to me, who was rude when I asked him for a ball, stuff like that. So, you know, my rooting interests are kind of bizarre, but then again, there are a lot of people out there who play fantasy baseball where they'll have a favorite team in real life, but then they'll root against their team if their fantasy player comes up. So it's kind of like that for me in catching baseball and going to all these stadiums.
Now, I have to ask you one question that I know that our listeners are very interested in. You are friends with Lisa Ann.
What does she get for lunch?
I assume you're a fan of her work. What's the deal? What's the relationship there? Are you guys just friends? Maybe a little more than friends? I mean, that's we all kind of see pictures with you out with Lisa Ann, and we ask questions in our brain.
It's a good question, and I appreciate your asking rather than making all kinds of awful assumptions. Basically, she retired 6 months ago from the adult film industry, and she's transitioning into basically being on sports radio. She hosts her own sports fantasy show on Sirius XM called Lisa Ann Does Fantasy, which is a catchy name. But in all seriousness, she's very knowledgeable and smart about sports, and she was trying to learn baseball so that she could host her show year-round. And she bought a bunch of baseball books, and she told me that the first one she got was my book called Watching Baseball Smarter, and she really enjoyed it and got in touch with me way back in February, had me on her radio show. We kept a correspondence going, and I invited her to go to a baseball game with me, and I thought she'd never take me up on it, but she did. We went to the Mets game on June 16th. I have a big blog entry about it with lots of photos. If people just search my blog, which is called The Baseball Collector, it's currently the top entry there. And just recently I texted her and said, you know, do you want to see the A-Rod ball in person? I don't know how much longer I'm going to have it. And she wrote
such
back,
a baller.
Like, hell,
that's,
yeah, dude.
Such a baller.
Zach, that is a hell of a game right there. Do you want to see the A-Rod? Now we're talking about getting the most out of this ball. Texting Lisa Ann saying, do you want to see the A-Rod ball is such a great line.
Yeah, man. So I spent 5 hours with her yesterday. We met up in the morning after I had a different TV interview on some Canadian show, and she took me to a radio studio where a friend of hers was hosting his fantasy sports show, and we were on the air with him for like an hour and a half. Then she took me out to brunch, and then we took the A-Rod ball on a little tour of New York City. We took it to Times Square. We took it to a nice patio roof deck on a hotel overlooking Midtown. and, you know, just had a really nice time hanging out and talking sports and life and, you know, and about her career as well. You know, there's really nothing that's off limits with her as far as what we talk about. And she's just been so cool to me. It's really fun.
Zach, we know you're on borrowed time. We appreciate your extended stay here on the Shoot Around. We can follow you on Twitter at Zach, Z-A-C-K underscore Hample, H-A-M-P-L-E, ZachHample.com. And I've got your books right here, How to Snag Major League Baseball's Watching Baseball Smarter and the Baseball. Best of luck and continued success.
Guys, thanks so much. I really appreciate the chance to tell my side of the story and be on with you.
And, Zach, I know you're going to be at Citi Field tonight. You're going to see the Cubs. Try to get Chris Bryant ball because he's going to Cooperstown someday. And if you ever come out to the bleachers at Wrigley, let us know. We'll get you a beer. We'll grab some balls.
That sounds amazing. I would love to keep in touch.
Thanks, Zach.
Time to wrap it up here. Shoot Around Podcast, WGN and WGN Plus with Big Cat and Sam Panionovich. It is mailbag time, and I think we come in hot with this one from Drizzard. I'll let you take the lead here. Who do you hate more, LeBron or J.J. Watt?
J.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt is in the news this week because of that fake video that he tweeted out. It was, I rarely get my blood boiling just from a tweet.
That did it?
Tweet had me furious. I was stomping around the cat cave so angry. J.J. Watt or LeBron? What a good question. I still hate LeBron more, but let me just say this. You know when they do like the power rankings on ESPN and they'll have like the slot, how where they were the you know previous and the arrow? J.J. Watt's arrow is green pointing up and he jumps like 10 spots a week. Because every – just get out of my face, J.J. Watt.
And this is a fellow Wisconsin fellow.
Yeah. I should love him. I should. But he just can't. I also have to be real with the people who trust my opinions out there, and they know that I won't stray them wrong, and they know that J.J. Watt is the worst. And I tell them he's the worst. I think I was the first on this J.J. Watt hate train, which, you know, you got to get over the fact that he does do a lot of charity, which I can mentally easily get over. I'm not a big charity guy, as people know. So I hate J.J. Watt.
Wow.
I do.
Well, and he's dating Caroline Wozniacki now.
That's just a publicity thing. Everything J.J. Watt does is publicity.
So that's not real.
J.J. Watt can't. The thing is, all right, here's the perfect explanation for J.J. Watt versus LeBron. LeBron I will always hate. There's nothing LeBron can do that will get me to like him. J.J. Watt has the ability to come back to earth. If he just starts being normal, if he starts being like Gronk or Patrick Kane, just a regular guy who enjoys his celebrity and not doing these fake stunts and always talking about how much charity he does. And, you know, every little thing has to be a I've said this before.
He has to share it with you.
No, and J.J. Watt wakes up in the morning and he basically says to himself, how am I going to get on SportsCenter for something off the field? Good. And it's the worst. It's nauseating. So that's where I'm at with J.J. If I've extended the invite to J.J. Watt. If he wants me to do his PR for him, I could turn this ship around in 2 months.
Well, you'd say no to half the stuff
he does. I'd say no to half the stuff, and I'd basically take out my phone and videotape him. I'd like pour beer down his throat, videotape him, tweet it, and just be like, look, J.J. Watt drinks and is actually a regular guy.
At Suburban50, first question, why aren't hoverboards a thing yet? And second part, is it a government conspiracy?
That's actually a great question.
I always thought jetpacks were greater than hoverboards, but now I'm not so sure because I did YouTube hoverboards. Those things are pretty cool.
I just don't understand what went wrong between Back to the Future and now. I mean, when did Back to the Future come out?
1985?
How the hell did we go 30 years and not be able to figure this out? That's disappointing. And I, you know what?
July 3rd, 1985.
I know that people are like, oh, you need to go explore space because space this, space that. Screw space. I want to be able to not have to walk anywhere that I go. That's what I want. Yeah. I don't care about Mars.
Cars have sort of stalled.
Well, Mars can go to hell. I don't need Mars. Mars, who cares about Mars? I want to be able to not have to move my feet when I go from place to place.
And it sounds like the auto industry hasn't been satisfying you because, oh, there's satellite radio and power windows and heated seats, but we need something more.
Yeah, I need
a lot more.
Let's
get it going here.
Yeah.
I need coffee to come out when I push number three.
Also, I just wanted, this is probably not very related. I need America to go to the German system with the highways. I need every highway to be like 100 miles an hour. I'm sick of this stuff. When I get on a highway that's like 50, what's 55 around here? I mean, when you go through the city, it's 55, the speed limit, and then it gets to like 60, 65, but it just, I need 100 everywhere.
100?
100. Any highway needs to have 100 as the speed limit. That's the next president, whoever's going to get elected in 2016, put that on your platform, and I'm voting for it.
Or at least make it 75, but then give a buffer zone.
Or just
because
there
are a lot of bad drivers that I don't want. I can think of five off the top of my head that I don't want driving 100 ever.
Well, then okay, all right, hear me out. Then we go 100, and we make everyone take the driver's test again. You get a highway license and a regular, you know, city street license. If you don't pass the highway license, you don't get to drive. 120 now with the new license. I'm going 120.
And if you're a good driver, you just keep getting more and more perks.
Exactly.
Eric Jagers asks, what are your expectations for the Cubs as we approach the second half? Do you think any moves will be made? I think they should make a move for Jonathan Papelbon. He can be had. The Phillies are a mess right now. Ryan Sandberg just quit again. Surprise, you shouldn't be. Did it in his career as well. That team is a hot mess, and they need anything under the age of 30. You can get Papelbon for a very, very low price.
I think Papelbon would be good because when you look at the Cubs' bullpen, I've always said this all year long, it's like every single person is one spot off where they should be. You know, Rondon's not really a great closer. Papelbon should be the closer. Rondon should be the eighth inning guy. Strope, you know, guys like that. Mott should be situational guys. They still need a starting pitcher because I think that that's a mess. Hendricks and Wada, I don't trust either of them at this point. So you need a guy. I mean, they need to find a guy who's like a dependable older guy. I know that they've been throwing around Nice from the Mets. He wouldn't actually be a bad option because you're just looking for someone to give you innings at this point in that fourth role, and they still need the bat. And I think Soler will hopefully be part of that, but it wouldn't be bad if they found another bat as well.
Anything I may have missed? You had something that I thought
you were going to
ask?
So here's my question.
Okay.
You stopped gambling after March Madness?
Final Four.
All right, so I retired from gambling last week. I came out of retirement on Monday. Or no, I came out of retirement, Monday.
So you said you'd wait till football, and you lasted
I lasted like 10 days.
Okay,
I lasted 10 days.
Double it up.
I had some inside info on the NBA draft that turned out to be not correct, so I came out of retirement for that.
You should have taken mine. I told you Kaminsky
I didn't have that line. I didn't have that line. So what do you do when you don't gamble? Like, what do people do? I don't understand it. It was the most boring 10 days of my life.
Work out?
No. Next.
Work out?
Next. Like, I
work out.
I'm being totally honest. What do you do every night when you don't have the entire board bet? Like, maybe this is the sign that I need to go to Gamblers Anonymous.
There is a pillow here. Would you like to lay down? You can lay down if you want.
I quit gambling for 10 days, and I've never been more bored in my life. I was taking my dog for, like, two-hour walks, then I'd get home, and it would be 6:30, and I'd just be like, what the? I have, like, four more hours that I have to sit here. Like, you know, people watch shows. I'm not a big show guy. So I think what I've come to the conclusion is that I'm just a gambler 365 for the rest of my life.
I have an idea. Maybe you can just take whatever you were going to play, put it in a pile, and watch it stack up for another 5 years. You'd move out of the apartment.
Listen, I can't think about that
pile.
You'd
buy a house.
That pile already bought a house. That pile bought, like, a big house. So we don't think about the pile in the past. I also tried to play DraftKings. I tried to play, like, I have a fantasy team. I don't care about it because it's like $100. So, yeah, I guess, I don't know. If anyone has suggestions for what I can do when I'm trying to quit gambling, I would love to hear it, but I'm obviously not going to quit gambling.
All righty. Well, thanks to Zach Campbell for hopping on. You can follow him on Twitter at @Zach_Hample. For Barstool Big Cat, I'm Sam Panayotovich. We might have a very good basketball player in Chicago joining us either next week or the week after. She may join us. Do you get who I'm hinting at?
Oh,
wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
I would say probably my favorite basketball player in the Chicago area.
Stay tuned for that. You can find us on iTunes. Search for WGN Plus. Find it under the Shootaround. You can read him at BarstoolSports.com. He's the Chicago Hub on Twitter at BarstoolBigCat. I'm at SP Shoot. See you next week.
Absolutely.